Hello, my name is Melanie Harrington. For this podcast on Crossing Boundaries, I interviewed my mother, Charlene Harrington, about teaching boundaries and the responsibilities of teachers in their work environments.
I am a teacher for the School District of Philadelphia, and I currently teach pre-kindergarten Head Start. I have taught first grade and third grade.
Charlene seems very happy teaching Head Start. She's been with them for about 10 years and has found a home among the children and the staff at Duckery.
My class consists of 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. They're 3 before September 1st, and they're 5 right after September 1st if they miss that kindergarten cutoff. Some of them are the brightest kids ever, and they just need to wait another year. So I'll challenge them with harder work and individualize what we're doing with them. And some just turning 3, August 15th, and they're the babies of the bunch, and they need that nurture and love and care. So then you're doing the opposite with them. You're reading to them and sitting with them and talking with them and looking at pictures with them. You're not challenging them as much, but you're giving them that nice social atmosphere to learn. We do a lot of role-playing, a lot of scenarios, and if I'm reading a story that might have a good social learning skill in it, I'll emphasize it while I'm reading. So I'll use literature a lot, and I use songs a lot. But it's no more, oh, have your mom or dad or have your parents on it. And you can't say guardian to a child. So you say, oh, have mom or dad read it. Or you go show grandmom and don't forget to show your aunt. Because you know who is responsible for who within certain weeks of the school year. So then this way, you know, a lot of times when I'm talking in class, I try and include everybody's relative when I'm talking. So this way they're not saying, well, but I don't have my mom and dad living with me. You know, I have my cousin taking care of me, whatever. So I include, when I'm talking to the kids about their relatives, I include those relatives in a conversation. I use literature. I use music. We do role playing. And then there's like, what if? And a lot of pretend that goes on. So that's how I address those types of things in the classroom. And then we have a lending library and the kids do a little picture report. And it's always 3 kids out of 19 that are constantly using the lending library. And they're like, well, I didn't do a picture. I don't have a paper hanging up for lending library. So then maybe at the beginning of that, we'll sit with that child one-on-one and go through a book and then let them draw a picture. This way they get something hung up. So this way they're not feeling like they were left out. And they don't get a chance to do good things, too. Because you want them all to feel like they're important. You want them all to feel like they do nice work. You want to give them that self-confidence.
Every teacher structures their classroom differently. They have different ways of learning and teaching their students. No two teachers teach the same way or believe in the same ideas of teaching.
I'm the type of teacher, some teachers believe in read around the room, and they put all kinds of tools around the room, and they post everything. So if you're working on a problem, you can look up at the wall and say, that's an idea I could use for figuring out algebra. There's the equation over there, or there's the word I needed to know for a sentence I'm writing off the word wall. Or, you know, so some teachers, it's their preference on how they have the students use the tools. They might have them posted around the room, or there's some that are very visual, and they like to give their students visuals, and therefore they have the number line on the desk, or the 100th chart maybe posted in the math area, or they have the globe posted for social studies and different things. And so they're more visual. So then they realize that the kids need visual aids as well as auditory learning and you know, the other different dimensions of learning. So it depends on the personality of the teacher, their experience, what grades they've previously taught, if it's a grade they've been teaching, if they're teaching a younger grade as opposed to an older grade, and vice versa. It depends on the kid's maturity in the classroom. Maybe they're beyond that number line. They don't need a number line, you know. So there's a lot of different components that would help a teacher make up their mind on how they teach and what they teach, how they go about it.
Being a teacher is not as simple as setting up a classroom and teaching a lesson. There are certain needs that need to be met in order for a child to be able to access its learning side.
The kids can't learn unless their physical needs are being met. So that's one big difference since I started teaching. that I've seen. Even in first grade 10 years ago, I had one child out of a class of 30 who wasn't eating, and she was getting herself up and dressing herself and coming to school, and she was coming to school late. But out of 30 children, she was the only child at the time that had issues like that. Now I'm seeing at least anywhere from 10 to 12 kids out of 19 having issues with being washed, dressed, fed. So it seems like the needs of the children have gone up.
Teachers have a ton of responsibilities that they are held accountable for. A lot of people think that teachers go to school, they teach, and then they come home without a care in the world about the children they are responsible for throughout the day. There's a lot more to a student than just being a number out of 30. They have physical needs that aren't always met while they're at home.
A teacher can't teach unless the children trust the adult they're with those 6.5 hours a day, 7 hours a day. A lot of the children that come to school have trouble forming relationships not only with peers but with the teachers, and it takes a good amount of the beginning of the year for a child to get used to a new setting, a new teacher, to form relationships so that you can accomplish your educational goals and then they could achieve what they need to achieve.
Teachers have 30 children to educate. Not all of these children learn on the same level or share the same thinking processes, especially when the class is so diverse in age. There are, however, certain things that a teacher needs to consider and think about while teaching a class that may have children who struggle with learning or social interactions.
If it's a child that has, like, learning difficulties in math, then you're going to try different mathematical strategies, or maybe activities that you send home, or maybe activities you do privately and during the school day with that child, or pairing them up, whatever it is. If it's a child with behavior issues, you're going to try and address that behavior in a positive way. You're going to try and offer problem-solving strategies so that child could increase more positive behavior in the classroom or with peers or with staff, whatever the need is. So you're going to exhaust every possible scenario, outcome, strategy to address that need. Teacher is responsible for the whole class as a whole learning, not just the children who don't have a problem.
There are certain struggles that come with the job of teaching and certain aspects of it that people don't see outside of the classroom.
There's never ever enough time in a day. There's never enough time in a day to do paperwork. Paperwork is always there, before school, after school, break time, lunchtime. There is no break time, lunchtime. It's just finding time to do everything. And then if you have a class that's extremely needy, it's extremely hard to stay on task and on topic and on pace with your curriculum if you have to keep stopping to address certain issues, behavior issues, social issues, academic issues. This tomorrow. I could do this tomorrow. So there's always a tomorrow.
So what is one of the hardest decisions you've needed to make in your teaching career?
Probably to call Department of Human Services on families. Because it's a hard call to make, especially if you've been dealing with family for more than 1 year. And you want to keep giving people the benefit of the doubt that things are going to change or they're going to do something. And sometimes they try, and then they just revert back to old ways, old habits. I think calling the Department of Human Services is always the roughest, because no matter what happens in a child's home, home is always home. And to interrupt home for some children is so detrimental. Even though mom's not washing them and dressing them and waking them up on time for school, mom's still mom. So when mom's taken away or they're taken away from mom, that's like really detrimental. So I think sometimes, you know, reporting abuse or neglect is hard to do, but you have to do it because you have to look at the well-being and the future of the children, not just what's going on at the moment.
Even though teaching has its ups and downs, Charlene informs us that she wouldn't trade what she's doing for the world. The children are what make teaching worthwhile, knowing that you made a difference in a child's life. Thank you for listening.